Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So why do I feel like I have chronically tight hamstrings? I stretch them. I roll them, I whip them out. I can't seem to do anything to get that tension out of my hamstrings.
Yes, I think this is something that's it's talked about all the time. I get questions about it constantly, and people are always telling me, I foam roll all the time, I stretch all the time. I don't know why they're always tight. And so I think, first of all, breaking down this idea of tightness and this chronic sensation that we're feeling within the body. And I think it's important to point out that this feeling is just that. It's more of a feeling. It's not necessarily a contraction of your hamstring. It's not like your hamstring is shortened and it's a different anatomical structure than anyone else's, and that's why you feel so tight, you know? A lot of times it's just this feeling that we have in our body based on a lot of different things we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I bring this up a lot of the times when I think of range of motion and like at the knee, or, oh, I have tight quads or tight hamstrings. Like, I've been in the surgery room when they've been replacing somebody's hip.
Yeah,
me too. And when someone's under anesthesia, you know, you truly can see how long those muscles can get.
Yeah.
Without tearing, without having any major like physical damage done to them. I mean, when they replace a hip, they then want to test the range of the joint, and they damn near put that leg like up by someone's shoulder.
Yeah.
Just to show that, okay, the joint can get full and excessive flexion.
Yeah.
And so like, what, to Jen's point, when you're under anesthesia, your hamstring, I bet you, can lengthen to the point where you can almost touch your nose with your toe. So again, the length is there. It's just a matter of like, how do we calm down this multifactorial thing that is tightness or tension? Because it develops in a lot of ways. And yes, we might have more input into our hamstrings and they might tend to hold a little bit more tension. We're going to talk about that can happen for many reasons, for many different mechanical reasons. But also there's this concept of, if we have felt tightness there before, or if we feel like our hamstrings have been persistently and chronically tight, just that idea of tightness starts to become a thing that might perpetuate the feeling of it. Similar to pain, in the way where when we have this chronic cycle of pain, our mind is much more likely to perceive the pain and then perpetuate more pain. If we've been chronically tight or feel like we've had tight hamstrings for a long time, our brain is automatically going to say, okay, hamstrings, those things are tight, of course, and we're going to perceive this tightness, even again, if that's not exactly the reality, or if we can make a lot more change there than we think we can.
Yeah, and we know, even the evidence has shown that, say a person has lost a limb, or they've
had to have an amputation, or for whatever reason,
they might still have that feeling and that sensation of tightness happening within the hamstring. And or the joint or whatever, the limb that's gone, right? And so we know that it's not necessarily due to the physical aspect of what's happening within the body, but it's more of that mental aspect of what we've trained the brain to believe and to feel. And usually our brain goes into a tightness mode when it feels like it needs to protect.
So we have a podcast coming up on cramping here and things that you might be able to do to prevent cramping, or what to do when the cramps come about. But something we can always be doing is staying more hydrated, not just water either, making sure we have the specific nutrients, micronutrients like sodium and potassium that are super involved in regulating our muscle contractions and nerve impulses. That's why Jen and I drink Element on almost regular basis. I have a couple packs a day, especially because I'm somebody who sweats very consistently, and I know that I am losing a lot of these electrolytes through my sweat every day. Even if you aren't somebody who outwardly sweats, you are constantly losing moisture and electrolytes through your skin, so we need to be aware about putting that back in. And Element has the perfect balance of sodium, potassium, and magnesium that help us regulate muscle contractions, regulate our nerve impulses, help us avoid feeling too much fatigue and confusion later in the day. And magnesium can even help with regulating our bowel movements and our sleep. So if you haven't tried Element yet, make sure you go down to the link in the show notes. It's drinkelement.com/optimal, and you will get that free sample pack with every single order, so you can try out all their flavors and find out which one is your favorite to make sure you're staying hydrated and feeling the best you can.
And we've talked about this on a lot of different podcasts, where it's that idea of, oh, I can't bend over and touch my toes. Well, like to Dom's point, where you could be in an operating room, and when your nervous system is shut off to the world, we have all the range of motion. But when you're alert and awake, and all of a sudden you go forward to bend down and touch your toes, your body goes, oh, that doesn't feel safe. I'm going to pull and I'm going to restrict those hamstrings from that range of motion. And you have that feeling of tightness. And then you foam roll and you try to passively stretch and you try to do all these things. But we're not really reprogramming that feeling and that sensation that's happening from the brain and then carrying down to those hamstrings.
Yeah, the thing that we'd like to try and resort on a lot of these methods of like rolling or using percussion tools or using different massage balls, whatever it may be, even passive stretching. If we're just passive stretching, a lot of those have very limited times of effectiveness or times mm-hmm. that they actually bring down the tension in the muscle. So like, we're going to talk a little bit about how we can start to program something for longer term, you know, reprogramming of that muscle, programming that we can get into more lengthened positions with tension on that muscle, specifically the hamstring, and not feel that tightness or not have our body want to protect and grab in and put more tension into that hamstring. And one important thing that we want to mention about the hamstring is it's a multi-joint muscle,
yes.
Right? And that's really important to keep in mind, because it attaches all the way up under our sit bone, which we call our ischial tuberosity, and then goes all the way down and attaches on our lower leg, mm-hmm. you know, at the kind of the top of our calf. And why this is important is because when we're straightening our knee, we're lengthening the hamstring, but also when we're flexing at the hip, we're lengthening our hamstring. So there's two joints that we can actually manipulate to put more of that tension through lengthening into the hamstrings, and it actually affects it slightly differently. Mm-hmm. Because if we flex at the hip first, then we're putting that length into the proximal or the upper part of the hamstring first. And then if we straighten from the knee first, then we're lengthening or, you know, putting more length and tension into the lower part of that hamstring first.
And then the flip side happens when we go to work that hamstring, right? And so mm-hmm. a lot of times we think of hamstring curls and we're just thinking of bending at that knee to kind of work the hamstring. And a lot of people are really good at working that distal aspect, that where the hamstring attaches in toward the back of the knee. But we're not always as effective at working the top of the hamstring. We always think of the glutes. As soon as it comes to the top of the hamstring, we think the glutes are overpowering. And sometimes that is the case because they are so powerful. But we want to also make sure that we can feel that hamstring through the entire length. So we're going to talk about why that's important. But it, you know, when we go back to looking at what is really disrupting this sensory input that we're feeling in the hamstring and creating that sensation to need to grab on and be really tight. You know, yes, it is the sensory feedback from our brain. So how our brain is interpreting mm-hmm. it and right. And what the sense is that it feels like it needs to be in space and in time through movement. It also correlates in neural tension. So how neural tension is your nerves, right? So how our nerves also get tight, not just our muscles. So we have to also look at how much tension we have through our nervous system and just our nerves in general, which we know our big sciatic nerve. Everyone knows that one, right? That comes from that low back, goes down the booty, and then goes back the down along the hamstring. So if that's...
And it innervates the hamstrings
yes.
as well.
So if that's really tight, well, that's going to play a role, or restricted in movement. It's not moving well through that muscle. Well, that can play a role in what you feel in the hamstring as well as general fatigue in the area. So maybe we're overworking one aspect of it. They talk about competitive anxiety. So even if we just were to address anxiety that an athlete might have stepping out onto a court or out onto a field, really affects the tightness or the response that the brain might have into that hamstring. And then the last one we're going to talk about too is the lumbopelvic control. So that motor control that we have from that lower spine down into our pelvis really affects too how we then control our outer muscles, which are our glutes, our hamstrings, our big workers.
Again, because our hamstring attaches on our pelvis.
Yes.
So every time we change the positioning of our pelvis, we're changing the amount of tension in the hamstring and the length of the hamstring, essentially. Yeah. So that's another case where people might feel like, oh, I always have, my hamstrings are always tight, but you tend to be someone who's always sitting in an anterior pelvic tilt.
Mm-hmm.
That is the position where our hamstring is going to be slightly longer. And again, anytime that we are lengthening that muscle for an extended amount of time, it's going to feel like it wants to have some tension in it, mm-hmm. or it's going to feel like it wants to protect and create some stability.
Yeah.
Because again, in general, when we're in anterior pelvic tilt, we're also not activating through our glutes quite as much, because our glutes, when we activate our glutes, it's going to cause a little posterior pelvic tilt. So again, our hamstrings might just be trying to find some sense of proprioception, some sense of what's going on by automatically adding in some tension if we're always sitting in an anterior pelvic tilt.
Exactly. So let's start to break some of this stuff down, right? I think one of the questions is, should I foam roll? Like, is that really going to be the thing that's helping? And I think it always goes back to, it depends. Like, there's, and that's, I know, so hard to say, but there's no one answer. If you've been foam rolling and you still feel like you have chronically tight hamstrings, probably not the answer for you, right?
Yeah.
If it's not making change, like, it's, then it's not doing much.
Or not the only thing, like, or you should add something else in, because you know, we did an entire episode on foam rolling and what it's doing, and when you put foam rolling in, or when you kind of put that pressure into the muscle, you can foam roll the entire portion of the hamstring. You can, you know, foam roll your medial and your lateral hamstrings, because we have hamstrings
inside
kind of on the inside and outside of the back of our thigh. And you can foam roll all the way up to the proximal portion where it attaches kind of in the bottom of our booty. And when you do that, you're kind of just changing the input from your brain down into that hamstring. You might be modulating some pain. So pain might seem to come down a little bit. The tension might seem to come down a little bit. You might seem to have a little more freedom in how you move that hamstring. So it can do some great things, but that effect is just short term.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking like 24 to 48 hours, you're going to maybe have that input slightly modulated or changed. So what do we do during that time?
Yes.
You know, what do we do after we do the foam rolling to then start more so reprogramming and reinforcing that reprogramming? And that's where we kind of always come back around to loading.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the cool things that you could do directly after this too, so there is a test that I've shown on social media before. What is the difference between a hamstring stretch and a nerve stretch?
Yeah.
And a lot of times people are loading into their nerves more than they are into their hamstrings. And this has been taught to us through like growing up. I mean, I can remember in grade school, it's like, okay, sit out with your legs in front of you and pull your toes back toward your face. You know, well, if we're trying to force our toes back, that is putting stress and tension on our nerve, not our hamstring, which is why we might feel things out into our calf, which is why we might feel something down into our foot. You know, it's not necessarily that we're stretching those tissues, because it's not a lot of tension on the stretch.
Yeah.
It's more so that we're tensioning the nerve. And so we have to be really careful with how we're stretching as well. So this is where, if you did just foam roll, if that is a part of your practice, which we're not saying it has to be, but foam rolling is great because like Dom said, it's going to aid in that tissue relaxation, right? So we're going to get that relaxation of the tissue. One thing that you can do immediately after is then start to glide and put some tension through the nerve. So not a sustained hamstring stretch, but this is what we call active hamstring stretch. I show this in like a lot of my plans on Gen Health, where you just grab, laying down on your back, you grab the back of your leg, and then you just kind of pump your leg up and down. Don't worry about the foot flexing back towards you. If you just keep your foot pointed toward the ceiling to start, you just kind of are gently starting to put tension through that nerve. And then if you need a little bit more, that's when you can start to put that toe back towards your face, just gently again. For nerve tensioning, flossing, we don't want to put so much force through it or hold it for a sustained period of time. We're really just trying to get that mobility of the nerve through the muscle tissue a little bit better to glide and move.
And, you know, on top of that, I like doing the laying down on your back and straightening the knee one because, again, you have your hip flexed already, mm-hmm. right? And then you're straightening your knee. So you already have that proximal part of the hamstring in the lengthened position. And then when you're kicking, then you're kind of completing by lengthening at the knee in the more distal part of the hamstring versus mm-hmm. if you're standing where your knee is already kind of straight and then you kind of hinge at the hips or kind of go into that anterior pelvic tilt and hinge at the hips, then we're kind of almost doing that in reverse where the knee is straight and then we're flexing the hip. So you can kind of compare those two, laying down on your back and kicking your leg straight versus standing and then hinging at the hip. Where do you feel that hamstring stretch? Are you feeling it in slightly different spots? Do you feel like one of those is more where you feel tight? Mm. You know, that could help direct maybe which stretch or which kind of active hamstring stretch you're going to use.
Mm. But I think we have to always be cognizant, right? Because if I'm standing and then bending over, my body might go into that protective mode
yep.
and fight it. So just being, it's starting to bring awareness. Awareness is everything. Awareness is what's going to help with that motor sensory input that we're feeling. And especially when we're laying down and doing like the nerve flossing, one thing that's so important, especially when it comes to feeling chronically tight, is that we pair that with breath.
Mm-hmm.
So incredibly important. So we never want to be holding our breath through exercise, especially when we're talking about something that's already chronically tight. We want to be consciously breathing. So using that breath in from that low rib cage and nice and slow out. So that's going to help to get more movement of that tissue. That's going to help to get more relaxation of that overall hamstring so that when we go into something like loading, we feel a little bit better.
Yeah, it's kind of like using your breath as your ally when you're doing your stretches or when you're trying to lengthen that tissue. Because a lot of people, when they go into a stretch, it is kind of like, ooh, I'm feeling tight. And you want to kind of bear or grit and bear against it. Or what yeah. we've been taught growing up. Okay, just sit in this and hold it and feel the burn.
Yeah.
And you're not consciously breathing. And if we're holding our breath, then that is sending more of those danger signals.
Yeah.
And that's almost going to perpetuate that pattern of chronic tightness more than using that breath kind of as your ally to just get global relaxation in the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, what we mentioned is one of the most important things, like as you start to explore these different forms of stretching, is how do we start to load that hamstring? And how do we get active loading through the entire portion of the hamstring? And a good way to kind of test this out, especially on the ground where you might feel a little safer, is using bridges. So you can just kind of have your heels tucked a little bit closer to your bottom to start, do a bridge and go back down. And then how can you scoot those feet out just a little bit? Because as we scoot the feet out and we straighten our knees just a little bit during the bridge, you're going to feel those hamstrings come in more and more. And how far away can you get your feet from you without your toes coming off the ground too much? And again, what are you feeling through that hamstring as you're doing that? That's going to really start to load that hamstring kind of at intervals of different lengths.
Yeah. I think that's really, really important to start to get that different sensation through different lengths within the hamstring. And one thing I want to point out when you do that bridge, rather than thinking about lifting as high as you can, think about actually tucking that tailbone under a little bit, because just like we have the knee bent in a bridge, you're already putting tension through the back of the knee. So we know how to increase that tension in the hamstring lower, but do we know how to increase the tension higher? And that's a lot of the place that people kind of miss. So if you kind of just start by tucking that tailbone under, and then you're going to be thinking of pressing through that heel and lifting, well, then we're going to get a little bit more contraction and awareness mm-hmm. through the entire length of that muscle rather than just behind the knee and lifting the knees up to the ceiling. So really thinking, tuck that tailbone, feel the hamstring from the top, from the bottom, and then finding the different lengths.
and then kind of the next progression of this, you know, versus kind of slowly stepping out. I guess there's a couple different progressions. You can just do it where you go up into a bridge and they're slowly just stepping your feet out. So you kind of walk, it's a bridge walkout where you're walking them out as you're holding up in that bridge and then walk back in. You can also do it with towels or with sliders where you just have your feet or your heels on the sliders and slowly slide out into that or go up in the bridge, slide out, and then slide back in.
And I think it depends what we're going for there. So what's great about like the slide out is then now we're going to start to build that hamstring through that eccentric lengthening phase. So now if we lift into that bridge as high as we can with that bottom tucked under and then slowly let those feet come out, trying not to let the bottom touch the ground until the very end, that's where we get that load through the hamstring as it lengthens out. So that's a big, that's a great one to start to reprogram. And because now we're finding that length of that hamstring, but we're doing it nice and slow as we kind of lengthen.
It's probably great to start there before you add the portion where you pull the feet back in during the slide.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, to Jen's point, focusing on the eccentric is a great way to build that strength through the length. You're stronger in that eccentric phase, actually. So if you try to just pull them back in, that might be where it becomes a little bit too much if you're not used to that.
Yeah.
So doing just the eccentric, letting your butt go down, pulling those heels back in, and then doing your reps that way could be great. And then I think to your point versus the walkout, that's kind of great for the next phase of what we want to talk about, which is like that lumbopelvic control.
Yeah, that's
because
what I was
every time
say.
You lift a foot up, you know, our pelvis is going to want to dip to that side. So with that hamstring activation during the bridge walkout, we're actually also needing to become more aware of what's our core doing? How is our our lumbar region, our low, you know, abdomen and our pelvis holding that control? Can we do that walkout without our hips kind of tottering side to side?
Mm-hmm. And that's where then I like starting at the bridge because it's really easy for people to remember, but it's such a bent knee position that again, a lot of the tension and awareness is going toward the distal aspect
of that hamstring,
yeah. Especially when we slide out, because then we're extending from the knee. So another place that we can't forget to strengthen and stabilize in is in standing, because that's a lot of where people are feeling that tension and tightness. So it's learning how to hinge again, which is just that bending motion from the hip, but do it with some intention of, can I feel that top part of my hamstring? So if I reach right below where my sit bone is, so if I feel my sit bone and I feel right underneath it, so I put my hand right at the top of that hamstring, usually doing this in a staggered stance is a little easier because with that foot that's in front of that staggered stance, you can kind of think of drawing that heel back. And as you hip hinge and just kind of lean forward, as you draw that heel back, you should kind of feel a little bit of tension start to pop into your finger. And that's the top of the hamstring. If you can't quite feel that yet, that's where it's going to take time and practice to really bring awareness to that top of the hamstring. So we're not just activating in the bottom, but we're activating throughout the length so that we're really maximizing that awareness to decrease that sensitivity of that feeling of tightness.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, in standing, this is ultimately the most important place to instill and continue that programming battle of how do we find that awareness through the entire length of that hamstring in standing, in loading weight-bearing positions, especially on one leg.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that staggered deadlift can be an amazing way to start to feel that activation. And then that's where progressing into some sort of single leg, like RDL or almost like a airplane type exercise where you are on one leg, you kind of let your opposite leg go behind you and feel that tension through the entire portion, feel the stability of your pelvis. Like, am I keeping my pelvis relatively stable? We don't want it to be as much of a balance exercise initially because we're trying to focus on the hamstring.
Yeah, so use a wall,
use a chair and focus on how can I feel that tension in that hamstring as I'm going into this single leg RDL position and then coming back up and kind of pulling through the heel, keeping that booty kind of tucked under so that you're activating through the entire length of the hamstring.
Yeah. And then we can go into like the lumbopelvic support more so in that single leg when we do like the airplane rotations. Mm-hmm. So if I let one hip drop and then I open one hip up, we'll show all these exercises on YouTube too. You can even try to feel a little bit more hamstring activation if you stand about a foot away from the wall and you push one leg into the wall. Well, add that leg that's pushing into the wall. When you hip hinge and then you drop your hip and you rotate, you really get a lot in that, in those hamstrings, because one leg's kind of kicking up the wall, so we're trying to initiate that hamstring. The other leg's pulling back into the wall, into that hip hinge, and so we're getting that hamstring activation, and then we're moving through the pelvis to kind of find that better lumbopelvic control, awareness, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, and these are just examples. Like, we've named a few examples of exercises. There's so many that you can do. The more awareness that you have, the more strength that you have throughout the full length of the hamstring, the better you're going to have control.
And I think the progression, though, is the thing that is important to focus on. Because again, you can fill in any stage of that progression all the way from laying on your back and starting to distinguish between nerve tension and hamstring tension. Mm-hmm. Then starting to just get that hamstring mobility, both, you know, laying down and focusing on, okay, where am I feeling it? Then coming into standing, and can you get that same hamstring tension in standing? Continuing that breathing, so you're using breath as your ally, starting to then load in maybe some laying down positions on your back using bridges, coming up and loading where you have both feet on the ground, and then progressing into like more dynamic single leg activities. That's kind of a great progression to start that reprogramming, to get that hamstring feeling, okay, I am strong, I have the length, and I can do this in great functional positions.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. We hope you enjoyed and learned a ton. Of course, if you heard something that you know can benefit someone else, please share this out, whether it's on social media, whether it's to an immediate friend. We love to get the word out about how you can help and improve your body. And you know, we have so many episodes on the Optimal Body that do that. So if you haven't yet, please hit subscribe, look through our episodes. If you haven't noticed something that we haven't covered for you, let us know, DM us or reach out through email. We are happy to cover more topics and make sure that you feel good and secure within your own body.